Welcome to the Flick 66 Superhero Special. I am Dr. Thomas Parham from Azusa Pacific University Cinematic Arts Department, and with me as always is...
Ryan Isay.
And he's also a professor in the department, and we have student critic...
Aaron Linneman.
And alumni critic...
Ryan Clem Barnes.
So we have an all-star panel of fanboys.
Can I point out that I'm the only one here not wearing a superhero t-shirt? Even though we're doing radio, we have a Superman, which it should be no surprise, is Tom. We have a Captain America, and we have an Avengers Infinity
War. I got
War.
The Infinity Gauntlet.
And here I am with my Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind t-shirt. Like,
he's clearly got serious film school cred, folks.
That's on my watch list on Netflix.
You haven't seen it?
No.
Oh, it's an amazing movie.
I love it.
Amazing movie. Oscar-winning screenplay. Charlie Kaufman.
Oh.
And wasn't it that his third nomination and first win? Something like that?
That sounds, yeah, because being John Malkovich, adaptation.
Adaptation. Yeah. Love the Kaufman. Okay, so now that we've got intros out of the way, we're going to talk about superhero movies by the numbers. And the elephant in the room, Avengers Endgame, opens this Friday. I have avoided spoilers on the internet. All these reviews people are posting, I hear it's supposed to be immensely satisfying. I will wait and see it and keep my mouth shut online to let other people, you know, have a chance to see it before opining. So do the same. If Doctor Strange could see the Endgame tens of millions of times
and not say anything,
so can you. Let's talk about box office by the numbers. Number five, Avengers Age of Ultron made $459 million domestically. I'm still not a huge fan of that movie. It was no secret that Joss Whedon had a huge falling out with Marvel Studios because he wanted character development, specifically Hawkeye's family, and the studio made him shoot this cave scene with Thor that really makes no sense. It's completely expository to set up, hey, here's how all these movies link together so far.
Yeah.
So, you saw Ultron, right, Ryan?
Yeah, I've seen them all. I don't skip any of them. It didn't stick in my mind at all.
I like elements of it. A lot of it's not as much. I mean, I do like the Hawkeye storyline because I kind of thought Hawkeye got a bit of a bad rub in the first Avengers, just being Loki's slave the whole time. And I liked getting to see him do a little more. It does get less and less entertaining to me as the years go on. A lot of that is sadly, in the villain, because I had watched the cartoon Avengers Earth's Mightiest Heroes, and one of the plot lines they did was Ultron attempting to destroy the world, and it was so impactful and fun and interesting. And then James Spader gets cast to basically be himself in the Blacklist as a robot. And
you're saying that's a bad thing?
It's not a bad thing. It just doesn't really fit.
James Spader only plays himself. That's just basically what he does.
Yeah, I'm on that. I think I'm the only one on the opposite end here. I actually enjoy it the more I watch it and the more I realize what it led to. In some sense with characters, I mean, that's just, I don't really, I mean, I try to keep up with everything, but I do like some things more than others. I think some of the things I liked is, you know, some of their nightmare sequences, delving in more into the character. Anything that, and Hawkeye's farm is definitely my favorite part of the entire film, if that says anything. So, yeah.
At number four, with $535 million, The Dark Knight, the middle film of Christopher Nolan's Dark Knight trilogy. I like this film a lot despite its flaws. It has almost a fourth act, and there's so many things, you know, part of me wishes he hadn't, if they had left Two-Face for another movie, but I could see why they wanted to end it up, and you know, Heath Ledger won the Supporting Actor Oscar posthumously for Joker, and it's a brilliant take on Joker. I prefer his Joker as kind of this embodiment of anarchy / chaos versus whatever that was Jack Nicholson was doing in Batman 89 and collecting a huge paycheck. But this is kind of the movie that gave street cred to superhero films because people, you know, critics raved about the movie. And this and WALL-E are the two main reasons we now have up to 10 Oscar Best Picture nominees. because they did not get nominated in the top five. And a lot of people felt that they should, one or both of them could have been nominated. Other feelings about The Dark Knight?
Yeah, I'll talk about it later.
Okay.
I feel like that mysterious. Was, I feel like The Dark Knight was the beginning of the end in terms of intelligent superhero films. I feel like that's when they realized, oh, we can just make a ton of money off of them, and they started getting dumbed down. That's the last one where I remember there being actual complex, like, not easy black and white issues within a superhero film. I feel like they've kind of lost that a little bit.
I don't disagree with you.
There was a little, I liked it a little bit in the last, in Civil War, the last Captain America, but I feel like it didn't kind of, they didn't go anywhere with it. It became this, like, stalemate that we just sort of... we had Thanos that basically Deus Ex Machina resolved it without them actually ever delving into the conversation.
Or Deus Ex Machina.
Yeah. But which is also why I you know, I mean, we'll talk about this. I'm sure it'll come up. But which is also why I like Winter Soldier. Because there's some complexity to it. And I feel like it's slowly been dissipating. Like an air out of a balloon since The Dark Knight, that we're getting dumbed down movies. And it's simple. It's just because they realize that if we dumb it down, then it'll sell to every demographic.
Yep.
It won't leave anyone out.
Four quadrants.
Yes.
Did you have any thoughts?
The Dark Knight is this really interesting thing for me because I watch it and I definitely think this is a spectacularly well done film. The execution of it is really well done from a production standpoint. But for me, the biggest problem is I kind of forget about Batman in this film a lot of the time. And that is largely because I find Heath Ledger so captivating in this role of absolute anarchy, and he really is my favorite thing in the film. And the plot kind of just never quite gets to a place where I could say this is one of my favorites of all time, but I always enjoy watching it.
Cool. At number three, The Avengers, $623 million. And this was the first big team-up movie from either of the major comic book companies.
Is it just me? Or, like, I don't like it as much as I used to. That's just me personally.
Oh, interesting.
I don't know. I think I just think some of the choices in the film, I don't know. I could be that I've just watched it too many times. But
I think that maybe this is just my opinion, but I think it feels like a safe film.
Exactly. And it feels like just a really expensive, like the cinematography bothers me too, because it looks like just a really expensive TV film.
I feel like they were testing the waters.
Yeah.
It was like, we don't want to do anything that will rock the boat too much because they have all the money we're putting into it. And then they've slowly been like playing with, you know.
Do you think that could be because Whedon is, started as a television director?
I think.
And so even though he's a great visual storyteller,
yes,
the scope and scale, there's a difference between when you get somebody who's worked primarily with cinema.
I don't think it's necessarily wrong for the movie. I just noticed in some scenes I'm not talking, the end battle is spectacular visually, but I'm talking about some of these scenes, you literally have just a camera moving in one direction as they're talking, and nobody's moving in the background. None of the S.H.I.E.L.D. agents are moving in the background. Nothing's really going on. When you have discussions between when they're in what's the big hangar?
Mm-hmm.
When they're inside.
Oh, the helicarrier?
The helicarrier. When they're inside the helicarrier talking, for a lot of it, you notice nobody's moving in the background. You know, there's no special camera movements. It's just the pan going in the same direction.
I feel like, and maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like maybe with him not being as experienced with this large of a budget and having to deal with that many egos on set, that it was just, I mean, this was the first time we had this many major stars in one film. And I heard there were issues of, like, you know, kid gloves, make sure this person doesn't feel left out and this person. And all of that, you know, it's maybe harder to deal with all the little things, the little background things.
I mean, you've got the six founding members of the Avengers, and you've got Sam Jackson, and you've got oh, why can't I think of his name? Tom Hiddleston as Loki, and you've got Stellan Skarsgård as Professor.
And let's not pretend entitlement doesn't come with celebrity. Yeah. So,
it's just something I noticed. I mean, it doesn't dissipate watching it too much, but it's definitely not. I don't get the feeling when I first saw it, you know, back in the day. It hasn't stuck with me like it was when I first watched it.
See, I feel about that film how I feel about pretty much every superhero film since then. I watched it. I was impressed by it. I enjoyed it. I didn't feel anything or think anything afterwards, and I haven't since.
So basically,
I can still go back and watch it and be entertained by it. But
it's not a movie that makes you think.
It doesn't resonate at all, intellectually or emotionally, for me. And I feel like it is all about that, like, oh, let's give them spectacle, let's give them laughs, let's give them this. And even the emotional moments, even the characters that are killed off, because it's Joss Whedon, and of course he's going to kill a character off, as he always does, until Marvel Television revives him shamelessly. No, but even those moments, I mean, I felt a little bit something, but if I go back and rewatch it, yeah, I know he's alive. I'm never going to feel anything that moment again, because I feel cheated, which is why I didn't feel anything at the end of the last Avengers movie, because I anticipated the cheating. And listening to the teaser for the new one, it's hilarious. It's like, you mean we can take it all back? It'll be that simple? Like, they're basically setting up what we all knew. I know they're not going to just take it all back. I know, but it's hard for me when you leave on that note, when I've already seen that you'll just reverse it.
Especially I get that 100%. There's just like, you know, I was showing my girlfriend all of these, and she doesn't fully understand like Marvel's pattern of taking things back. And she was like super excited for Endgame. She didn't watch anything. And then she found out they're making a Spider-Man movie, and she's like, well, now I'm not as excited for Endgame because the stakes aren't, you know.
Exactly. That's obnoxious. And that was my problem. And I'm going to go from one unpopular opinion to another. That was my problem with the last Lord of the Rings movie. Every single time one of the important characters is in danger, there's some Deus Ex Machina moment where some god machine, you know, ghost army arrives, or the ground falls apart everywhere but where your army is, or eagles arrive suddenly. The other movie, something was at stake. Although with that last
some
one.
Some of those are from the book, you know.
I don't care if it's... See, that's where I get the argument, like, oh, it's from the source material, so it's perfect. No, the source material wasn't perfect. That's what that means. He's not God, he's Tolkien, and that means that his last book was perhaps a little flawed, and it's fan appeasement, that it wasn't giving us actual stakes, and that's a problem. But yeah, I don't that was the same argument I had with Marvel with the Avengers. Is like, well, but you know, in the comic books that's how it's okay, but I'm looking at it as a movie, and as a movie it gave me no resolution. It just gave me a reason to come spend more money, and that's frustrating as a consumer.
Yeah, and I totally understand that. I don't disagree that I'm not saying that you shouldn't look at each film as its own movie. But I also don't think it's wrong for the, you know, with Infinity War pandering to fans. You know, you have these fans who support the movies and give money to the movie so that it can be successful. So I don't think it's ultimately wrong for them to pander to fans.
Pandering to fans. It's this fake, oh, we killed off the characters when we all know that they didn't. Like, that's just silly. Yeah. And well, I know it was in the source material,
anybody who thinks that they were going to get rid of all those characters, especially Black Panther after he
was
literally
surprising.
Set box office
that
records.
That was surprising.
Come on, wake For up
me,
and smell the...
Nobody thought Black Panther was going to be snapped.
Okay,
was going to be dusted?
Nobody before the movie.
If they had not done it with Spider-Man and Black Panther, it would have had an effect. But for me, as soon as they did those two, I rolled my eyes. Because please.
Because the sequels have been, I mean, Spider-Man Far From Home comes out in July,
unless
it's a flashback.
And when you give me a Spider-Man death that's three times the longer than anyone else's disappearance in the movie, and he has time to go like, I don't want to go, Mr. Stark, I don't want to. Please, that was some contrived, manipulative BS. It worked.
Tell us how you really feel,
like,
right?
It's enough, like, if we already know, if you know they're not going to get rid of Black Panther, you know they're going to get rid of Spider-Man, okay, fine. But don't drag it out with this lengthy death scene that isn't needed. That's silly. You're going to give us a trailer in a couple months. Why are you doing that?
Since we're already on the topic, Avengers Infinity War by the numbers is number two with $678 million. I don't really disagree with anything Ryan says. One of the I've presented some conference papers on comic books and superheroes. Surprise, shocker when you walk into my office and see all the action figures and whatnot. But one of the articles I came across a few years ago, and I think the writer was onto something, what Marvel has done is basically taken television sensibilities to the Cineplex.
Yes.
These 22 films really play out as this huge maxi series.
See, you're
the Infinity Saga.
You're kinder than me. I was just going to say, this is a soap opera. This is a never-ending soap opera. This is a general hospital. Characters will leave, characters will die, but the show will continue until we stop watching.
They're basically, now that Phase 3 will be complete as of Friday.
Nope. They announced that Spider-Man is end of...
Far From Home is part of Phase 3?
Yep.
The epilogue. Okay, now that Phase 3 is almost complete, the 22 or 23 films will be boxed and packaged together as the Infinity Saga.
Right,
saga.
Packaged together for merchandising, but there are many characters that will continue, including the contracts.
Well,
if you list,
I just look at it as a huge TV season, because TV seasons run 22, 23 episodes. Yeah, we got 22, 23 movies.
This TV season just ran 11 years.
but other shows with seasons get canceled. General Hospital will never get canceled. It'll go on indefinitely. So that's how I see the Marvel
Maybe
movies
Space
right now.
General Hospital. and numero uno by the numbers at the box office. These are domestic numbers. Black Panther with $700 million.
That's the one on top critically, too, and I don't agree with that. It has a higher critical score than Dark Knight on Metacritic by like 4 points, which I think is off. I don't think that's quite accurate.
Ryan, you're going to say something.
This is a really interesting movie for me because last year when I was here for our roundup heading into Infinity War, Black Panther was my number two Marvel Cinematic Universe film. Mm-hmm. I don't know that it's in my top five anymore.
Oh, wow.
Because the more I've gone back and watched it, the more I've listened to this podcast and listened to the wise words of Ryan Isay.
What am I, chopped liver?
Sorry, Coop.
I had class with you. I have to glean my information from him from this podcast. it's this third act problem that I think a lot of superhero films have.
You mean armies of CGI versus armies of CGI?
Bring on the rhinos.
And the more I watch Black Panther, it's really weird. But the more I watch it, the more I find myself liking his character more in Captain America: Civil War than I do in his own movie.
Oh, interesting.
Because it's distilled. I think Black Panther had the best arc of anyone in Civil War because it was distilled to that movie and there was a conclusion to it. And then you get into this new movie and you give me this beautiful looking world in Wakanda, which I think is one of the best looking things, even though I can, with how many movies I've been watching lately, I can clearly tell when things are CGI, where I used to kind of just deal with it. Where I'm like, yeah, that rhino was clearly fake, and how did I not see that to begin with?
But, you mean there's not a hidden West African kingdom protected by vibranium?
I still enjoy this film. I think it became this thing that I don't really know why it got so big. I'll
talk about that a little bit later.
And I still enjoy it. I just think it's not as fundamentally groundbreaking as some other things in the earlier Marvel Cinematic Universe, where we were in a place where the superhero films couldn't work and we got an Iron Man that blew everything open. But I really enjoy this film. It's not that I don't enjoy this film. It's just this, everything comes to a giant battle in the third act. And even though Killmonger was going about everything in the wrong way, he's still right because they do what he was trying to do, only less violent. And
hashtag Killmonger was right.
Yeah. And I'm just going to tag off of that. You're not the only one. I've watched videos of people saying they like Black Panther's arc way more in Civil War than in his own film. just a lot better. I think they said that the Russos handled Black Panther's character better than the movie itself.
Well, I think for some people that those would be fighting words.
Part of the problem too is that he has the benefit of not being the leading character in Civil War, and sometimes you get to have more fun when you're not the leading character. And he's kind of boring in Black Panther, and the villain kind of overshadows him because he's a little bit bland. Mm-hmm. It's not really. I don't know. I think there's multiple things that are preventing me from liking that movie with multiple views. And I agree that the third act, the best it gets for me is South Korea. Once we get past the South Korea sequence, I feel like the action dissipates.
And the battle ends because a rhino decides to not run over the woman.
Okoye.
And he licks her. And then she's like, are you going to really kill me? And then they all drop their weapons. It's just like...
I
will say, all because the rhino decided not to run over her.
What you said with Black Panther being not the main character in Civil War being a reason he stood out, that's the reason, like, when I watch Black Panther, my favorite characters are Killmonger and Shuri and Agent Ross, because they have these great moments. They don't have to carry the whole film by themselves.
I think my favorite is, what's his name, with the one arm? Andy Serkis. I love Andy Serkis. I heard that in an interview that I think Ryan Coogler said that he regrets killing him off or something
He could be undusted.
How are we going to get the X-Men if they don't just magically make them possible after this movie?
I mean, according to Feige, we might not see the X-Men until Phase 5 or the very end of Phase 4.
I mean, but we're going to get X-Force, so we can't really pretend like the X-Men are gone, right?
That's not a part of the MCU, though.
Well, okay.
No. We are getting Deadpool. Disney has said Deadpool will be. They're not recasting Deadpool, and it will be still R-rated. So you'll have to watch it on Hulu instead of Disney Plus. But otherwise, they're recasting the X-Men
for. So we're not considering MCU.
Dark X-Men. Phoenix is the last one, right?
Well, it's the last Foxman.
Yeah. So we're not considering X-Men movies unless they're Marvel movies now?
They're not MCU.
They're not MCU.
Right. But they're still X-Men movies, right?
X-Men movies. Yeah, just like we have five Spider-Man movies that are not MCU, and then the Tom Hollands are MCU.
Saying for the context they're part of the MCU.
We have six
Spider-Man
movies that aren't MCU. It's a Spider-Verse. I don't know. I count Spider-Man. Well, it's animated, but still, it's the better.
Yeah, we won't get that. We'll talk about that eventually. So critical mass, and you'll see some overlap. Number five, and I went by Metacritic because Ryan turned me on to the joys of Metacritic, which does a better job of aggregating critics' opinions than Rotten Tomatoes, which just basically has a thumbs down, thumbs up. So number five from Metacritic is Iron Man at 79. I think Iron Man doesn't always get the props it deserves because it did kick off the MCU, and it's a really well-structured, well-produced, movie.
I don't think who gets enough love.
Jon Favreau.
I was just about to say, he does not get enough love for kicking that off.
Honestly, he's the only filmmaker that has survived the Disney world and brought me something that The Jungle Book, I did not want to see. I don't like the animated Jungle Book.
And seriously.
It's one of my
least favorite
of the
Disney classics.
And he won me over.
You know what he did is he had the screenwriter go back to the source material. So based on, it went right back to Rudyard Kipling's The Jungle Book. They might have credited the animated screenplay, but a lot of the things were taken, they went back to Kipling. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just like some of the animated to live action Disney classics.
Yeah.
It wasn't just, we used the animated film to storyboard the live action one.
Yeah. And he's the only one, honestly, that I can think of that's made a modern Christmas film that I would consider a modern classic since Christmas Story.
Elf.
I think that's the only, every other Christmas movie tends to be kind of obnoxious.
Yeah.
But that movie.
Did you see Hot Santa? I mean,
Bad Santa?
No. The thing that was on Netflix last year.
Oh. The Christmas Chronicles.
The Christmas Chronicles. The nickname is Hot Santa. Fun.
Okay.
It was fun.
It was corny.
And Goldie Hawn has a cameo at the end as Mrs. Claus. It was fun.
it's corny as
It's like a John Hughes '80s Santa style.
You know, and I thought Shazam was a good Christmas endeavor.
Well, it's not a Christmas movie.
It's not a Christmas movie.
It just
but
takes place.
It
at
takes
Christmas.
Place. At
it's
Christmas.
As much of a Christmas movie as people would say Die Hard is a Christmas movie.
Yeah, and that's not really what I'm saying when I mean a Christmas movie. Elf.
You know, Toy Story could be a Christmas movie.
Oh,
then.
Okay. Let's rate it back. let's rate it back.
Our Christmas spectacular.
What month is it?
I do have a hot tip for you. Jon Favreau is one of the executive producers of The Mandalorian.
I am aware of that.
And dude, the footage they showed at Star Wars Celebration, people went nuts, and rightfully so.
They're doing
because he's basing it kind of inspired by Japanese samurai as well as the lone gunslinger in the Mythic West.
So he's inspiring it on the things that inspired George Lucas when that's what he should be.
No, but he's going back to the source material.
Yeah, no, that's good. I mean,
I love the footage of them doing the, you know, the ship VFX again,
actual models instead of CGI.
I appreciate that. Disney's still not getting my money, but I'll watch it when they put it on a DVD and I can rent it.
Or Riot will come over and watch
that
it by place.
Free trial.
Yeah, the week one week window. Free trial. Metacritic has Dark Knight number 4 with a score of 82. We've talked a little bit about that. Number 3 is Spider-Man 2 with an 83. You know, I rewatched Spider-Man 2 with my class a couple years ago. Actually, Ryan, I think you were in that class.
Yeah.
I so hate Tobey Maguire as Spider-Man. It's just like, every time he goes on screen, it's like, oh, that's right, you're in this movie.
I believe you referred to him as morose loser Tobey Maguire.
Yes, I did. Guilty as charged. I so much prefer Garfield or Tom Holland. And just when you see him,
Garfield does that
thing with his voice and you want to smack him upside the head.
I didn't like Garfield because he's too hip. He's too
hot.
Cool.
Yeah.
I don't care about attractiveness. He's just too cool.
Oh, I didn't mean by just his looks.
Hot isn't too popular.
Yeah.
I wasn't going to judge.
He's too attractive.
You know? I was
pulling for him and Emma
he's
Stone.
He's supposed to be a nerd,
They had great screen chemistry.
I got to say, though, a couple months ago, I went back and watched the first Andrew Garfield Spider-Man, and I'm like, oh, this is not aging as well as I thought it would.
Seriously?
Like, the CG for the lizard is so noticeable where I'm like, how did I not notice this years ago? Because, like, that was 2012, and that year I was willing to say I liked Amazing Spider-Man more than the Avengers. And now I'm saying, I don't know why I was so into this. I mean, I liked the potential the first one set up, and then the second one was just too much, and they went too far, and then they had to beg Disney to actually do it right.
I like the second one.
The second one had a scene with... You like the second one?
Oh, yeah. Because it has just as many moments that do not work, but then it has moments that work fantastically, and it does some things better than any other superhero movie. The color scheme for the film looks like a comic book movie.
Yeah.
The soundtrack, the electronic soundtrack, fits with the villain. Like, it has a lot of things going for it. That emotional moment, the death, that's the only death of a character in a superhero film that has actually made me cry, is that one. Is it a good movie? No.
No.
Do you know what?
But it's a more interesting movie than...
It's about to get better, because they had a scene where he and his dad reunite at Gwen Stacy's grave, and you can watch it on the Blu-ray, and they were going to put that in the movie, and then Amazing Spider-Man 3 was going to have Gwen Stacy become a Spider-Man. They were gonna resurrect her.
Oh, you mean like a Spider Gwen?
Yeah,
oh,
Spider Gwen.
Cool. Oh no,
I'd have watched it.
But the whole, like,
I just want to see a female Spider-Man.
His parents were alive. You know, they were gonna have. It's just like he's at this grave, and you hear like Peter, and he like turns around, and it's his dad, and he has this like, dad starts to blurt out exposition of like what happened to him and his mom.
Oh.
And then the dad says, with great power comes great responsibility.
Seriously?
Yeah, but that's probably why they cut it, because they didn't want to just immediately go back to what was already done.
I mean, the movie's a problem. It's not a good movie.
Well,
but it's more interesting to me.
The moral of the story is, let's not try to launch a franchise off of a single character and spin-offs in one movie. Let's just like tell a coherent story,
yeah,
and then maybe you can do your spin-off.
You know what I like about Homecoming, though, is that they show the lives of, like, regular people more in the whole world of the superheroes, so you get to see a little more of, like...
Well, we get to know to know Peter's classmates.
Yeah, I like that. I like that aspect.
I don't like that movie.
You don't like
it? It's so bland. It is so bland. Yeah. It is the most bland, boring, just... I can't stand it. They take no risks in that movie.
I didn't say it's the, you know...
No, I'm just saying... It's probably a better film. I'd rather watch a worse film like Amazing Spider-Man 2 and see some interesting things, actually feel something, rather than just shovel popcorn in my mouth and have my eyes glaze over.
even the scene with Michael Keaton doing his best.
Michael Keaton's wasted in that film.
Yeah,
wasted talent.
Although I find it interesting that the first modern era screen Batman ends up in a movie that won some Oscars called Birdman.
And then
he plays the Vulture in the sixth Spider-Man feature film.
Yeah.
Live action. Yeah. Just synchronicity.
The winged.
And then tied for number one, with scores of 88, are in alphabetical order Black Panther and Superman the Movie. We've already had some people talk about Black Panther. Superman the Movie, and we'll hear probably a little bit more about that. But... if nothing else, you got to give Superman the Movie props for starting off the modern, modern era of superhero films.
I'm pretty sure it was higher up on Metacritic a couple of years ago, too. I'm pretty sure it was higher than an 88.
That's what I got when I looked it up this morning. By the way, we didn't mention worst superhero movies by domestic box office. At number 130, Steel... with a box office take of $1.7 million. And I don't know if you've seen it. It's terrible. And we're not talking about craptastic. Well, it might be. Whether it's crap or craptastic, you'd have to watch it. But I don't want to inflict that on you.
How do you do that superhero without Superman?
Don't get me started. And in terms of critical mass, and believe it or not, Steel outranks both of these two movies. Tied at the bottom of the barrel are... with a score of 27, Catwoman with Halle Berry. She's lucky the Oscar police didn't repossess her award for Monsters Ball. And Josh Trank's Fantastic Four.
Fan-four-stick.
Ugh.
didn't even see it.
The less said about that, the better.
He even talks about how bad it is on Twitter. It's funny.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he realized he's made some strategic mistakes with his career.
I think that's what we're going to see before X-Men... from this deal with Fox. I think they can easily push the Fantastic Four into the MCU before they have to try and put X-Men in.
I want the Fantastic Four as a TV show, personally, for Disney Plus or ABC. I mean, if it's a film series, my dream cast would be... I can't think of Jack Ryan's name.
That's what I was about to say. John Krasinski and Emily Blunt.
They'd be perfect. They're the right age. They both are terrific actors. Yeah. They've got the right look. So, you know, and we've, you know, cast good character actors as Human Torch and Thing, and you got it made.
Actually,
the only reason I would watch that is if Krasinski also was on board as director.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Give it to him. I'd give him whatever he wants, because Paramount has wisely locked him down. They've greenlit Jack Ryan season 3 before 2 premiered, and Paramount has also greenlit a quiet place follow up with him, just directing and writing.
Hope they go the alien route for A Quiet Place. I know this is off topic, but I hope they go the aliens route. Speaking of Alien, I just picked the 4K Blu-ray. Anybody, if you're looking to buy a new 4K Blu-ray, it looks amazing.
Alien or Aliens? Alien.
The 40th anniversary came out yesterday.
The Ridley Scott?
Oh, yes. It is a beautiful transfer.
Cool.
I will say, the only thing I know about Catwoman, because I have not seen it and I don't plan to.
Oh, why not?
is that is one of the few instances where... Halle Berry was so openly accepting of her Razzie she won for playing Catwoman in that movie.
That's true. Yeah. She
won. Good for her. Okay, top five. Your list of top five superhero films. And we probably need to be on the clock for this, but Ryan I, then Aaron, then Ryan B, then me. Ryan I.
There's no competition for number one for me. Watchmen has been, probably will always be at the number one.
Oh, interesting.
Because it's complex.
Version of Watchmen, Ryan?
Any of the versions.
Okay.
Honestly, any of the versions. I think do the things that the Marvel movies have been doing in Civil War, Winter Soldier, all of the movies, the things they've been talking about, and many of these, they do it in a very mature. Mature to the point where they show us some graphic nudity that people probably didn't want, but was in the comics. So faithful adaptation.
Yeah.
But they did change it from the original. The ending has changed, and it's changed to fit with more of a post 9/11 kind of society. So I think that, yeah, I think that movie is highly
underrated.
I think it has the best first 5 minutes in a.
Oh yeah.
Solid
with the first fight.
Well, no, even the you got the Bob Dylan Times Are Changing song.
Oh, so the opening fight and the
main credits. I'm gonna get hate because I tried to watch that film at 3 a.m. one night, and it's still on my watch list. And I was falling asleep only because it was 3 a.m. And I was just like, I knew that I wanted to watch it in one sitting after I watched the credit sequence. So I still have to watch it, but I will tell you, I've never been so impressed with like an opening credit sequence with the storytelling, the use of song, it's beautiful.
And it was smart to use that opening montage to show this is an alternate reality and here are key points where our history and their history divorce.
Yeah, it's an alternate reality, but there's this idea that we can still, like science fiction, deal with relevant issues in our society today through this construct of a fake society or whatnot. I would say it has been a not so steady decline for Zack Snyder since that film. It's unfortunate. I feel like he had creative control with that one, and then everyone's like, oh, you're great with superhero films. Let's get you to do these superhero films. Now we have 15 executives breathing down your neck and telling you to do this and that and this. And that's the only thing. Either that or he had less control in Watchmen and now he has too much control. Something has changed because that movie was great and I haven't seen that kind of complexity or depth in any of his DC superhero films.
What are your other four?
My other four are... it's like all Watchmen for me. Hellboy 2 is absolutely number two for me. That movie is fun. It feels like a comic book movie, makes you feel something, has a whole variety of different kind of action, a lot of great practical effects. It looks like the troll market looks like something out of Star Wars, far more than anything in the actual Star Wars prequels, because it's practical, it's puppets, it's not just CGI nonsense, which was the downfall of the prequels for many people. Dark Knight, obviously number three for me. I think that's a great movie. And I kind of want to be annoying and have my four and five as Birdman and Donnie Darko, just so I can be like... But I won't.
I won't.
Thank you.
I love Donnie Darko.
But Donnie Darko is absolutely a superhero film. And Birdman, depending on who you read it, you could say, I don't think it is. So I'm not going to be annoying, and I'll say Iron Man and Burton's Batman, just because...
Of Batman 89.
Yeah, I just enjoy the design of it. I think that he was kind of ahead of his time. And, well, I mean, you could say that David Lynch sort of was ahead of him with Eraserhead. But that adapting or adopting the style of German Expressionism to modern fantasy storytelling, I think we wouldn't have as much from the superhero movies today. You know, as great as Superman is, Superman is more grounded in realism, and it's just this one character that's existing in a realistic society. But Burton created this whole Gotham. It was like a whole world. And that was really
The late Anton First was production designer of that. And DC Comics was so pleased with the results of the screen Gotham, they commissioned him to redesign Gotham for the comic books as
well. Oh, wow.
And they redid the comic book
Gotham. Wow. Yeah, people don't realize how much power there is in production designer. It's usually the first person that's hired after the director, and you can see it in that film. It's a beautiful film, even if Joker is clearly not great in that. So, yeah, that's my list.
Aaron.
All right. I paid my dues as a fan, and I put Infinity War as 5. I paid my dues watching 17 films. I'm going to enjoy it. even if it's not great standalone with everything else, it's a great film for me.
Okay.
Number four, I have Civil War. Civil War is a I don't think they execute it perfectly in what you were saying. You know, it does come at a draw. I would have loved to see more stakes, but I think the overall idea was great. I think they could have executed it better, which is why Winter Soldier is the best MCU film, in my opinion.
I would agree.
And it's the most that can be a standalone film. Love the I'm with you till the end of the line. I love the grain of Cap's black and white world of what he was, you know, his whole foundation was built on fighting for the right cause. But when the people he blindly trusts turns on him, who does he turn to? And I love that concept. And then I got to go number two for The Dark Knight. Visually, story-wise, I appreciate the level of how much they dive into the character of Bruce Wayne over Batman personally. I think it's, and I mean, it also helps having Heath Ledger's Joker. You know, if I had to go with best Joker, I'd say Mark Hamill, but we're not doing cartoons.
Nope.
That was one of the movies that really pushed me into, so I have a little bit of bias on it, because that came out when I was like in fifth grade. So it's one of those special films in my heart. And number one is Spider-Man 2. I dress up as Spider-Man every day. This is obviously a bias. I think it's the best original trilogy. I'm going to call it the original trilogy, the Raimi trilogy. Mm-hmm. Spider-Man. I think, the character, I know you don't like Tobey Maguire, but I think dealing with his character arc and, you know, all the changes in his life and what is it really worth it being a superhero, even though he gets treated like crap, you know, day to day. You know, he doesn't get all the, you know, he's not a Tony Stark, he's not a billionaire, you know, he faces the everyday man's challenge. And plus, pizza time is a classic meme. So, yeah.
Ryan B.
All right. Since we're not doing animation, I'll just throw out a quick plug. I love Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, everything about it. You'll watch it if you love it. But my number five is one that I did not really gravitate to it when I first watched it because I wasn't in love with the main character. But as time has gone on, I really have grown to appreciate a less crowded world of superheroes. And my number five is Iron Man. Robert Downey Jr. has grown on me in this role. In the world post-Infinity War, I am constantly looking for things that are smaller and more grounded in films. And this being the kickoff, it's one man, and Robert Downey Jr. is Iron Man. There is no question about it. And he has that charisma and this really... it just hits you because one of the things that Marvel has had a lot of dumb luck with is movies that they make lining up with world events. And at that point, we were in this place of worrying about like how we are in the world. And a lot of that plays into his weapons deals and him stopping it and going after the people who are selling his weapons. And one of the things in the MCU that I don't think gets enough praise is Jeff Bridges as Obadiah Stane in this film. He is a fantastic first villain for this franchise. And I watched an interview with him once where he was talking about how frustrated he was on this film because they didn't have a script a lot of the time and they were just going out trying to make takes. And he said he ended up loving that film because he sat himself down and said, John, think about what you're doing. You're doing a hugely financed student film. They don't know what they're doing. Treat this like what it is. And once he took it less seriously, he had so much fun with it. And I think that just reflects an overall that a film can talk seriously about things, but still be a ton of fun. So that's my number five.
It's one of the few that I think is, again, made relevant in the changes that are made. Yeah. And having it elements of the Middle East and, you know, the power being about the discussion at the center of it, there's you know, we can't ignore what's going on in our country when that movie was released. And I think that makes it resonates even more because of that. Because like you said, it's grounded in reality, yeah. which is also why I'm drawn to Winter Soldier, because it's that realism of like government and
exactly. And plus Bridges looks so cool on a
segue. So are you listening, Marvel? Give us more tied to reality, less of these third act, all CGI, which you know, I'm sorry.
I'll get through this faster with the rest of mine. But number four, it's Ant-Man and the Wasp. I know there are a lot of haters for this, a lot of people not thrilled about this franchise. And the more I watch this, I realize this is not a fantastic, world-changing movie. It is a very basic, often too misguided film. But I love Paul Rudd as Ant-Man. I think it embraced the funny more than the first one. It doubled down on a lot of the things I loved in the first one. And post-Infinity War, I was just kind of like, I like Ghost as a villain because she doesn't have to be the biggest villain of all time. It was getting back to something smaller. And it's just something that I enjoy. I know it's not the best thing ever, but I love it. Actually, I was wrong. That's my number three. I'm so sorry. My number four is Thor Ragnarok.
Yes. Seriously?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Because...
I thought you meant Dark World. I'm like, woo.
No. Thor Ragnarok is just fun. I love Taika Waititi's aesthetic as a director, which I'm sure is much better in his films that aren't superhero-based, but he reinvigorated a franchise that I never cared about Thor until I watched this.
You know what's interesting? Hemsworth was not happy with his character until Waititi came on board. Just like, you know.
Ragnarok was my six.
So. And Ragnarok is one of these things where, like, this is what I want team-up movies going forward to look like. It's four people. It's not everyone you have in your universe. It's these small clumps of people that you may not think work together, but you have this odd group of Thor, Loki, Hulk, and Valkyrie through the whole film, and they just really work off each other, and the humor just gets to me every time in this film. My number two is Logan. And this is just because this is the only X-Men film that I could care about. I know from past viewings it is a shameless retelling of Shane, which I have not seen.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like this movie, but I have to just for a moment describe the look on Tom Parham's face right now. The draining of life in his face.
Here's my problem with Logan. It's not enough that you ripped off the plot of Shane, essentially, but to actually have it playing on the TV in the hotel. Really? Really? Yes, it was nominated for an Oscar for adapted screenplay. It did not win, but I'm just...
It was because most people don't get those references, so they thought, let me just sledgehammer you over the head with it, which is my problem always with these movies that they tend to, like, but I like that it's Shane. Yeah, it was a little shameless that they have it on in the hotel room.
It's like Ferris Bueller in Spider-Man Homecoming when he's walking.
Oh,
yeah. Playing that too.
Annoying me as well.
The thing, though, that really gets me in this film is I think, in my opinion, Daphne Keene as X-23 is one of the most impressive performances from a younger actress.
She's good.
That I've seen. And it deserves a lot of praise. And I love the ending of her... even if it is a shameless ripoff of Shane, eulogizing Logan and the whole, I enjoy it. But if I'm going to be honest, if there was ever like a top films ever that I love of all time, there's only one superhero film that I would consider being in that. And that is Captain America, the Winter Soldier.
Yep. Good choice.
Yep.
It does everything so right. It reinvigorates a character who's kind of dated and just get from... seeing him in the first Avengers and from his first movie, it is the only Marvel film where I say that is top-notch fight choreography. That is what I wish was in so many more movies that we don't get. The dynamic of Cap's moral center being challenged in a world that is not as black and white as World War II. I just love everything about it. I love Bucky. He's one of my favorite supporting characters.
Falcon
is also one of my favorites from this film. And this film is just what I love in Marvel films is when you get to dive into a character and it's not all about people having to come together with limited character development to save the world.
Aaron?
Oh, I went. The
expert a little bit.
Oh, yeah. No, I love this film. It's definitely, I agree 100%.
Your list.
Oh, I already went.
Oh, you're. Oh, so it's my turn. Oh, my bad. I will go through mine pretty quickly. And from 5 to 1, number 5, Iron Man. Number 4, Black Panther. Number 3, Captain America, The Winter Soldier. Number 2, Superman, the movie. Number 1, The Dark Knight. Going back to Black Panther, one of the reasons why it is where it is in my list, it became a cultural moment. I mean, it is the highest grossing single superhero movie right now. And there's just something, there's no word. Last summer I was Black Panther for Lake Forest's 4th of July parade. And there's nothing like seeing white kids and white adults giving you the Wakanda Forever salute. And just, it's not far from perfect. I do like that T'Challa's journey is not just against cousin Killmonger, but also this notion of generational sin, because his father, Killmonger, had a point, went around it the wrong way, but the fact that you've got, that he has to find his own path as a king, and Ghost Dad tells him on the ancestral plane, it is hard for a good man to be king, and his ex-girlfriend, or former, his once and maybe future lover, that's not a Koi. Is that?
No, it's not a Koi.
That's
Nakia. Tells him, you must find your own path. So there's a lot to commend about it, but just the way this movie captured the imagination, not just of this country, but of the world. Traditionally, people don't expect African, Afrocentric films to do well overseas. And this movie exploded. So, but I do realize some of the flaws you point out, that T'Challa's a little bit underwritten and undermotivated, and internal conflicts are hard to dramatize. And we get the CGI versus CGI battle. And Shuri, who does not love, I mean, this cast, these strong women in the cast, between Angela Bassett, Danai Gurira, Lupita Nyong'o, and then, why am I blanking on Shuri's name?
Letitia Wright.
Just, you know, a lot of my friends who saw the movie before it was widely released said they liked its treatment of female warriors better than Wonder Woman, because in Wonder Woman it's presented, oh, you're a woman and a fighter, and in Wakanda it just is.
Yeah, that's the same with Captain Marvel. I think Marvel did a better job with the women warrior in Black Panther than in Captain Marvel.
Real quickly, worst superhero film, Aaron.
X-Men Origins Wolverine, number 4.
Don't disagree with you there. Ryan B.
Zoom.
What?
It is a 2006 film starring Tim Allen and Courtney Cox. It is horrible.
Oh.
Do not go look it up.
I won't.
I wanted to do something a little unexpected for this.
I'm going with Josh Trank Fanfortastic or whatever.
Fanfortastic.
Whatever that was he made, it's bad. It's bad. Ryan.
I guess mine's a tie between three movies people probably haven't seen. Toxic Avenger, because that movie's just gross. Captain America, the 1990 version.
I've seen that.
It was even theatrically released.
Oh, I know. The one with the fake ears. Yeah. And Matt Salinger, J.D. Salinger's son, plays the title role.
Yeah. So bad.
Yeah. It's bad.
And then really obscure, this small independent superhero movie, super small budget, called All Superheroes Must Die. I commend them for making a student film in this genre, because that's basically what they did. But it's about as good as you'd expect a student film superhero movie to be.
Pleasant surprises. Ryan Barnes, go.
It's really hard for me. I'd probably say Thor Ragnarok, even though I already said it.
It's already in your list.
But he wasn't expecting to like it.
Yeah.
If it
has to be something off my list, I'll say the first Ant-Man, just because I didn't know if I was going to like it, being the Scott Lang version instead of the Hank Pym version. And for what it was, it surprised me. I had fun with it. And
what else could you ask for?
Yeah.
Cool. For me, pleasant surprise, Hellboy 2. Especially, what's the Barry Manilow song? That caught me off guard. when they're doing
the remember, but yeah, it is pretty great.
It's just a lot of fun, and shout out to Doug Jones, woo, who just won a big award, the Ray and Pat Brown Award at the Pop Culture Association's National Conference, and Doug plays Abe Sapien in the first two Hellboy films. The good one is directed by Guillermo del Toro.
Shazam. I didn't know if it was going to be...
There was no lightning bolt, man. You're wearing a red t-shirt.
Oh, yeah. I love the film. It almost made it to my top five. I was pleasantly surprised how much I liked it because we've been on this huge superhero binge. And, you know, we get all these, you know... But I love the film. I love the foster home dynamic. I love the feeling. It made me feel good. I choked up. You know, it gave me all the emotions I wanted.
And I'll just say one word, Shazamily. You're welcome. Ryan.
I mean, I want to say Thor Ragnarok because I didn't expect to like that as well. I also kind of want to say Venom, but I don't know. I think I have to go with really bad movies that I appreciate, which would be Howard the Duck.
Seriously?
I'm talking about guilty pleasure.
Oh no, we're
talking about pleasant surprise.
Oh, pleasant surprise. Oh, I thought we were talking about pleasant surprise. I would say Thor Ragnarok then, or Venom, because I heard so much bad about it that I was expecting it to
for
be.
For me, Venom
horrible.
Was just a curiosity. It's like, what? I didn't hate it, but I'm like, what is he doing? I don't know. Why is Michelle Williams in this movie?
What is
Tom Hardy doing?
I was pleasantly surprised it was weird and not just bad or boring, I guess.
No. The audience score is a lot higher. Same with Alita Battle Angel. Those are the two last year that were way different from critics.
And guilty pleasure time. For me, it's Man of Steel. I know the movie's got some serious problems. However, there's something about when Cal discovers his powers and also the relationship between
Field of Dreams,
between Clark and Lois. I love that she knows from the beginning. I mean, she's following the story, and that's how she discovers who he is. So even though Cavill and Adams work for me, and even though those characters have had have not gotten the script they deserve, especially with the follow-ups, Batman v Superman and Justice League. But I hope that we're not done with Cavill Superman because I like him in that role. Ryan,
Yeah, for guilty pleasure, I'll say it again. Howard the Duck.
Yeah.
It's bad. It's so bad.
No, he's getting a cartoon series on Hulu.
Oh, okay.
With Kevin Smith as head writer.
Oh, I will watch that. I'll actually watch that. I cannot stand the Guardians of the Galaxy sequel, but I love that he has a cameo in it. I think that's pretty hilarious.
That's brilliant.
And then the second Ghost Rider, it's an awful movie, but the filmmakers, the way they shot that movie, just watch some making of filming, the cinematography, the directors, Mark Neveldine and Brian Taylor, they worked as camera operators and they did things like they shot on rollerblades.
Oh, wow.
Just holding on to the back of a truck, no helmet. Camera in one hand, other hand holding onto the back of a motorcycle.
Kids,
or a truck.
Do not try this at home.
Yeah, ridiculous. But the way that it's shot, it's an exciting film to look at, even though it's a horrible movie.
Aaron, your guilty pleasure.
Sky High. I was like six when I saw that film.
It's a great little film.
It's a great little film. It's not bad. It's just, you know, it's not my top five. Yeah. Well, I saw that when I was six, so I want to go to Sky High.
I just showed that to my stepson a couple months ago, and he loved it.
Oh,
it's
it
a great
brings out
film.
The kid in me.
You got Kurt Russell again.
You got the name War and Peace. I mean, how great does that
awesome
get?
War and Peace.
Isn't that the dude who's the lead of The Expanse?
I'm so upset that they did not do a sequel. They had many more years of high school
than
I would have loved.
We might be getting something on Disney Plus because they're going through the Fox Disney back catalog.
Well, I wanted
Sandlot the series.
You know? I went to the Q&A for Lego 2, which Mike Mitchell also directed, and I wanted to ask him about Sky High 2, but he left early.
Bummer. Ryan, guilty pleasure.
I'm going to say this is a film I didn't know existed till I watched in your class. The Phantom. It is just...
Boom!
So... corny and weird, but it's this weird kind of Indiana Jones, Tarzan serialized feel to it, and I don't know what it is about that genre, but I just enjoy it, and it's...
Slam Evil!
It's a man in a purple suit. How does it work? But I still enjoy it.
And Catherine Zeta-Jones' first major American film role.
I feel like that and was it Rocketeer?
Rocketeer,
should be like a 90s.
90s, 90s, yeah. And then forthcoming superhero films, we have Avengers Endgame opening this Friday, April 26th. Dark Phoenix, the last of the Fox Men series, June 7th. Spider-Man Far From Home, July 2nd. New Mutants, August 2nd. The Joker, starring Joaquin Phoenix, not in the DC Extended Universe connected film series. That opens October 4th. And on February 7th, we get Birds of Prey and the Fantabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn with Margot Robbie leading a female-centric cast. Thanks for joining us, and hope you stay hydrated this summer and have fun watching all kinds of movies, not just the superhero ones. Take care.
Bye.
Shazam!